KLA Talk 1580. So is this when America was great again? little Jackie Wilson. Hey, he selected it himself. That's his walk on music, and I'm just clowning because that's what I do. This is my guess right now is actually, I can actually call a friend. One of the only Republicans I can actually call a friend. He's a national leader for Braver Angels, a former nominee for Congress, former vice chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. He's also a musical artist, a noted writer, a public speaker, talks about racial and political reconciliation, and now a presenter on KBLA Talk 1580. I would say, I'm guessing, I could be wrong about this, but I think you might be our only Republican.
I think I do hold that distinction, Dominique, in addition to being one of your only Republican friends. So sad as that may be for other Republicans, I'm very happy to hold that title.
You know, my little sister said after Trump got elected, no new Republican friends. Oh. but I'm not adhering to that. If you know, I'm open to friends of all walks of life.
There you go.
But this got to be a challenging time to be a Republican, given what's going on with the election and just the sort of division inside the party itself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously it depends on the Republican that you are speaking to. I mean, I have whatever camp or label I find myself wearing, I'm always a bit of a contrarian within that group. For whatever. That just seems to be just part of my personality. So I don't know. I mean, I definitely, as folks will know about me, I have never been a, Donald Trump supporter. I'm out of the mainstream in that way. But I do consider myself to be philosophically conservative in many respects. And you, and of course, ran for office as Republican and all that. And you were right. The Republican Party today is very much divided. There have always been legs of the stool. You always had your social conservatives. People more animated by evangelical issues and cultural issues. You always had your libertarians, folks who are all about deregulation, low taxes. And you had your neoconservatives, folks who, were really anti-communism. You would have expected them to have been anti-Putin today and so forth.
Right.
But the America First movement, Make America Great Again, Donald Trump's movement and so forth, it's brought in a brand of populism that has really swept a lot of those old Republican traditions kind of out the window, or at least kind of displaced them as being the central driver of what the movement is today. And so you've got friction around that and some people fighting back against it. But, the old Bush vanguard, they're gone pretty much. You don't ever hear from George W. Bush these days. Mitt Romney, who remained in the Senate, I think many reasons just to challenge Trump and the new kind of mainstream, but he's declining to run for re-election now. So, you've got a lot of traditional Republican folks who are on the outs. They thought Trump was done politically after January 6th. Mitch McConnell said that he blamed Trump essentially for January 6th, but also said that, well, it doesn't matter. We don't need to impeach him because he's never coming back. He was wrong about that.
Right. And they decide they decide to enable him. A lot of those folks, and you know very well, pivoted and actually became
Kevin
Trump sycophants.
Kevin McCarthy came down on Donald Trump after January 6th. A couple weeks later, he was sort of kissing the ring at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's a repeating story. So you're traveling the country now as a Republican. Speaking and doing what?
I mean, I am a registered Republican, but traveling the country principally as an ambassador for Braver Angels, college campuses and other places.
But Braver Angels, part of what my understanding of Braver Angels is creating more civil public discourse, right?
Yeah, this is correct. And really trying to give people the tools to be able to engage over their differences in a way that ideally allows them to actually stay in relationship with each other, families, friends, colleagues, coworkers. And the thing I say about American democracy is this. I think that there's always two tracks in which we sort of have to operate simultaneously and hold in tension. On the one hand, we have to be able to advocate for the things that we believe in politically and socially. We have to be able to make the cases that we want to make for the policies we believe in, for the candidates that we want to support, et cetera, et cetera. And that is conflictual. That is competitive, right?
Yep.
You have to be able to argue over those
things. One person wins an election and the other one loses.
That's right. So politics in that way is zero sum. At the same time, though, democracy isn't just about competition in election cycles. It is also, I believe, in a higher sense, at least, an expression of community.
And it's about governing, too, which Republicans are struggling to do right now.
It is about governing. But if it's also an expression of community, that means that in order for it to work, we've got to remember that at the end of the day, we all got to live next to each other tomorrow. Our kids got to live next to each other and go to school together, et cetera, over the coming years and over the coming generations, which means that even as we compete in politics, we have to have some capacity to be able to discuss civilly and actually, again, sort of maintain some relationship with each other outside of that. Because if we fail to do that, then we're moving into sort of civil war territory. I just saw the movie, so it's fresh on my mind.
Politics
is what we
do
instead of violence, right? And so in the absence of relationships, the door is open.
That's a really weird definition. Politics is what we do instead of violence.
Well, it's true.
I mean, it's supposed to be about how we... how we support our society and our needs, you know, it's whether it's roads or schools or, some people argue defense, I'm not big on that, but that the functional aspects of society are part of governance. Mm-hmm. It's not just what we do instead of fighting, is it?
Well, what I mean by that,
Netflix.
what I mean by that, though, Dominic, is that politics is a framework for discussion and the project of self-governance, shared governance, right? Where we're supposed to communicate and reason our way towards consensus and solutions and compromise, right? So what do you do when we're not agreed on what the rules of the road are? What do we do when we're no longer talking and negotiating? There's only one thing left to do, and that's to fight.
There's always more to do. You can fight, you can pray, you can change your system of governance. People do that. I mean, the zero sum is partly the fact that we do not have, we have winner takes all. That's not a given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not what they do in England, for example.
Sure, right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or Israel, for that matter.
Mm-hmm, right. Well, I mean, America does have an odd system in many respects, because you can get 49% of the overall body of votes in a given series of elections and come away with 0% of the seats.
You can get 51%.
So, yeah, that's true, too.
I mean, Donald Trump did not win the popular vote, right?
Yeah, right. So, so ours there are very strong arguments to be made for reforming those facets, right?
Right.
But I'm just speaking from a broad historical sort of vantage point. It's true. I'm not the only person who has this definition. There's an old definition of politics, right? Violence is a major part of human history, obviously, right? And again, when communication breaks down, I mean, you see it in couples. You see it in people who, husbands, wives, boyfriends, and girlfriends, and so forth. You fail to be able to communicate and so forth, and all of a sudden, you're shouting, you're pushing, you're throwing things, potentially. Yeah.
Speaking of couples, you're also the only black Republican I know with a black wife. Why do black Republicans marry outside of their race? Not just men, the women do it too.
Okay, well.
Stacey Dash.
It's funny. I actually was in a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter on this very subject.
Really?
Because, somebody made this point. Somebody retweeted a picture. I forget who the brother was, but he was a conservative state legislator. He took a picture with himself and Tim Scott and a few other folks. And, saying Democratic Party's worst nightmare, right? And then some other brother retweeted it. You know the guy. I'm forgetting his name. But he was like, I looked at their wives, y'all. We good. And I was like, that's a stereotype, right?
It's
I was
a true
like, most
stereotype.
Most black conservatives I know are married to other other black people. And
they must be part of Braver Angels. Don't see it.
The funny thing,
Tim
though,
Scott, he's not even married, but his girlfriend is white, Thomas.
See, that was the funny thing, because when I looked up the most famous black conservatives I could think of, I was like, oh, damn, there is a pattern. There is a pattern here.
Do you even like black women? I mean, as a black woman, that does beg the question.
I do have an opinion. Because
the policies are anti-black, in my opinion. The choices of life partners are not black. Mm-hmm. I mean, love who you love. I'm not a segregationist, mm-hmm. but it's a notable trend.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a mixed kid, so I mean, interracial relationships is obviously something that, you know, that I think is beautiful as long as the love is real. But to
well,
your
it's
point,
existential
though,
for you and for me. I mean, my mom is Italian, but that's not the point.
No, it's not the point.
Love who you love. So we're talking about a trend within your party.
Here's my suspicion on this.
It seems to have political implications.
Truth be told, I think most black conservatives I know are, if they're married to other black people. But I've always said,
to introduce me to some of those folks. I've never met one.
But
it's
more than me, believe me. But I say this without judgment either way. But I've always felt that they're essentially at least two different types of black conservatives. One kind you see much more locally and the other kind you see much more nationally. But in actual black communities, you have black people who identify with conservative values because they were probably raised in a traditional cultural context of the church. They probably have resistance towards immigration, changing the basic demographics of the black community. They might have a Booker T. Washington mentality of self-help, but really it is about conserving a black traditionalism. And in that context, you have black conservatives who tend to marry black.
You're good, John. You're slick.
No, this is true. But then I think you have a black conservatism, which is really just black people who happen to be black, otherwise representing whatever the mainstream conservatism is of the Republican Party at the time, which means that politically and socially speaking, they might be, you know, not so distinguishable from your average white Republican. And again, I say that without any judgment. I have sympathies going in all directions. But in that context, I think those are the black Republicans who you see, first of all, elevated more typically on Fox News, elevated more typically in the Republican Party. They're black folks who can act as voice pieces for the larger mainstream Republican agenda. And that's a very white universe, you know, in which case you are more likely to make social, maybe romantic connections with people who are not necessarily from the mainstream of your community.
Our colleague, Dion Raymond, who also has a weekend show on KBLA, says, but there are those who believe the opposite, that we do not have to live side by side. I think that's true, and defend that institutionally and otherwise, remain divided based on discrimination, bias. I mean, you know, and we've seen that codified in law, whether it's housing covenants or, you know, de facto, like we see in Los Angeles, for example, where we are not really that integrated in 2024.
Well, and even after the integration of the school system, ostensibly following the reforms of the civil rights movement, schools across America became more and more segregated in the following decades in many cases. Residential segregation is still a demographic reality in many respects. But I think that the important point here is that when people, and you know, look, I'm totally fine with people preferring to be among their own, however they define that. You can't push people to want to integrate with other people, even though some folks may want to try. But I think that particularly
well,
so far
push
as
people, you can push people to stop discriminating.
Well, that right,
and
that's
excluding.
That's absolutely right. I mean, that, and
which is where a lot of that so-called, you know, segregation comes from. There's no law that you can't go to Beverly Hills High School, but try it if you don't live there.
Yeah, well,
unless you play football.
Right, and so, yeah, I mean, and that's more or less the point that I was going to make, which is that insofar as the force of law and policy is, to use sort of Kingian terminology, denigrating human personality and mandating exclusion directly or indirectly, then you have a context in which you cannot have genuine community in a democracy because people are being degraded and forcibly put apart and also being subjected to an inequality in terms of opportunity in the country. And that breeds resentment, that breeds resistance, that breeds appropriate grounds for protest. And so, you know, we have to take care in the way we do policy in America to make sure that it is inclusive and elevates people across the spectrum of identities. Because if not, people will not have reason to believe in the American experiment.
We'll get at this after when we come forward. But yet, your party is spearheading an end to DEI, has successfully ended affirmative action, has very clearly set out an agenda of not just not helping to repair the harm of our enslavement and Jim Crow, but actually wanting to double down on it. Mm. Not just getting rid of affirmative action, but equity and inclusion and diversity, meaning we don't even want you there. Even if you get in without any help at all, we don't want you there. And so that seems to be a contradiction for me in, you know, what you're saying as a non-crazy Republican and what the agenda of the party seems to be. We'll deal with that when we come forward. John Wood Jr. is my guest on KBLA Talk 1580.
She's reclaiming her time on KBLA Talk 1580. More First Things First with Dominic DePrima when we come forward. The conversation continues right now. Dominic DePrima on First Things First.
John Wood Jr. is here in the studio, and I am... I'm lagging. I should have reminded you. He comes on 9 o'clock Sunday mornings around here with the Reconstruction Project with John Wood. Okay, so we got some folks that want to talk to you. Before we do that, I want to allow you to respond to what I teed up about, you know, even the Republicans who aren't America First, the George Bushes of the world, or whoever the modern version of that is, if there is such as that. You don't hear people fighting back against DEI must die and ending affirmative action and ending black studies or, you know, sanitizing it to the point where it's the opposite of black studies.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, yeah, you're not going to find very many Republicans of any persuasion who are advocating for diversity, equity, and inclusion in terms of the programmatic regime of that. And it's not just Republicans. You've got a whole lot of disaffected Democrats who have come out very hard against diversity, equity, inclusion programs.
A whole lot.
There's a whole community of them, organizations,
it's
advocacy.
It's not a whole lot. It's a small group.
Well, look, it is but wait a second. It's a big enough group for me to be able to tick off, you know, four or five different policy organizations that are well-funded, that don't draw their funds from
Keyword
where Christopher...
well-funded, yeah.
But I'm just saying that don't get their money from Christopher Rufo and the Koch Foundation, right, that are comprised majority of people who are center-left academics and scholars and policy folks.
More center than left, but okay.
Maybe more center than left, but I'm
just
saying
because your
not,
definition of left and my definition of left are two different things.
Well, sure.
What you would call center left, I would probably call center right. But anyway, I take your point.
Let's take most.
But even the way you describe
the institutional
regime,
obviously,
those are voluntary programs that recruit people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even offer a leg up. It just says we don't have any black people or Latinos or women in this organization. So let's put forth some initiatives to make that possible.
Sure.
And get the best qualified people so we can have a more thriving institution because schools and companies do better when they have diverse workforces and or students.
Here's what I think the broader reality is with respect to DEI. DEI programs, like so many other things, vary once you get on the ground.
Of course.
They vary in terms of their implementation. They vary in terms of their design. They vary in terms of the attitudes and the abilities of the people conducting them. I think what you have is and I've interviewed a number of DEI practitioners.
What I do at
Braver Angels
been one, to be honest.
Okay, yeah. What I've done at Braver Angels is somewhat DEI adjacent, and so this is a conversational kind of sort of space. Well, it is in the sense that, you know, we are also working on diversity, equity, and inclusion, basically, but our focus is on ideological and political diversity, right? But within that comes, of course, the relevance of racial issues to politics. And so, you know, I think that you've got a lot of people who come in trying to create genuinely inclusive spaces where people can articulate their lived experiences in ways that foster understanding in the workplace in institutional settings, right? And they may have an emphasis on recognizing the fact that everybody doesn't have the same sort of power, privilege, or status in a relational structure in an organization, but they're trying to be inclusive. And then you've got other people who they go into these programs desiring, I think, to put a little bit of a social agenda across. And in the words of one practitioner I interviewed, they're really not satisfied unless they make a white person cry. That's a direct quote, right?
That's just silly.
That may not represent.
Why do we care about these doggone white people crying so much?
Okay, but see, there,
I mean, nobody, you know, sometimes you got to get a good cry. Get it out. Okay. Understand what the heck is going on.
Cry.
These policies,
cry be
John.
Cathartic. Tears,
these
can
policies,
be good.
John, that are built on white fragility are very problematic. We can't teach this real, actual history because it might make a white child uncomfortable. is insanity.
Here, you got to find the balance, though. Because, again, this gets back.
Suck it up.
Here's the thing.
Don't be a snowflake.
Here's the thing. If you have 90% of the power in a given context, you can put methods of getting people to sort of work together across that largely shuts one person out of the conversation. You can do that because you have the power in the system. A lot of people who have not had power in the system traditionally and who in certain spaces have some power now, I think are engaging in programs in a way to where they're leaning into their ability to do that. But what that does is that creates a backlash on the other end where people, even if they're white, even if they're men or whatever the case may be, but if they feel marginalized in a DEI space, suddenly, even if that's only 5 or 10% of what's going on DEI, it becomes 100% of the story on Fox
alert.
News.
Talking point alert. Because that's the same tired talking point that was used against affirmative action. Oh, you're going to be marginalized. You only got the job because you're black. Okay, it doesn't seem to be bothering Clarence Thomas. I think it's a really weak talking point. You know, get the people in the door. Give them the opportunity. Look, and affirmative action and DEI are not the same. I'm only comparing the talking point, not the reality. Because in a DEI setting, you have to be qualified for the job. But don't you see the irony, John, in the party that is 97% white, trying to stamp out DEI, the party that actually needs DEI the most, the party that has, even if we take them at their word that they don't hate us, which it's not even all of their word. You're trying to end the programs that could bring us in, and your party needs DEI more than anybody. You don't see the irony in that?
Oh, I see the irony, and furthermore, I see the reality of a real problem. I mean, the historical backdrop to institutional and social life in American society is that even as we started progressing towards a more integrated era, the cultural traditional sort of context of American institutions was such that the norms were all set by white people and all set by people who were anchored in a sort of Anglo-liberal tradition, which has a certain language, which has a certain way of comporting itself, to where even when you're bringing people in, you're also oftentimes bringing people in saying, okay, you person of color can step in through this door, but leave your accent, leave your way of dressing, leave your hairstyle,
leave your black wife.
That's messed up, Dominique.
I know.
Leave three fifths of your identity, you know, sort of behind you as you come into the door, right? And so DEI is also exists as a backlash towards that. But look, I just come back to the beloved community because it's insofar as you're practicing DEI in a way that makes space for everybody's lived experience, I think you're doing it right. If you're doing it in a way that's trying to sort of reset the scales in a way to where you're not necessarily making space for the lived experiences of people who you see as privileged, then you're going to create more problems for yourself in the long run because other people won't buy into those programs.
Okay,
and we're seeing the consequence.
It's not a talking point.
I talk to people all day about this, Dominique.
I know you do, and you do it very well, but it doesn't mean it's right.
It's not just me. No, but look, what's right is to be in relationship with people, and you got to listen to people.
Okay, we can agree on that. Right. John Wood Jr. is my guest. We got news, traffic, and sports, and more conversation on KBLA Talk 1580.
Say the quiet part out loud. KBLA Talk 1580. This is KBLA Talk 1580, where hate meets a scholarly match.
I'm talking with John Wood Jr. He is the host of the Reconstruction Project with John Wood Jr., 9 a.m. Sundays, right here on KBLA Talk 1580. But he does a lot more than that, and he has much greater fame than being one of my only Republican friends. He's a national leader for Braver Angels, a former vice chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. Braver Angels, if they want to find you there, you're on social media, and you guys have a website and all that good stuff.
That's right, braverangels.org, and you can find it on Twitter and so on and so forth.
All right, we got phone calls. We're going to go to Paul from L.A. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Dominique.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Good, good. What's on your mind?
Good. I love the conversation that you two are having. I want to kind of touch on some points from the topic, especially speaking about Donald Trump and everything, and why that matters overall, who is elected for president of the United States. Not only does the president nominate judges, federal judges throughout the country, but also the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And the Senate confirms these these people. So that's why both branches matter. But earlier you spoke of, why do you think so many people push towards a populist, like a demigod type of person? And NBC just did a poll recently of registered voters, and 53% that do not follow political news were favored for Trump. But check this out. Those that read the newspapers, read the national network news, and the digital websites skewed heavily towards Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me is there's just a flux of information that's coming through, for example, cable news, which is a lot of opinion, and YouTube and Google. And those are the things that shift towards Donald Trump overall. So I think that these conversations are necessary, especially within our community, because chaos is not good for your 401k, for your retirement, for your stock portfolio.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when people think these things are funny, how he acts and what he says, people forget 10 of the last 11 recessions that this country has encountered happened under and were started under Republican presidents. Hmm. And sometimes people forget the chaos and those decisions directly impact you, your family, and your money.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I'm happy to respond to that. I really appreciate the call. There's a lot of solid perspective in that. It doesn't surprise me, first of all, the results of the poll you're saying. Now, there's potentially two explanations for that, and I actually think that there's probably some truth in both of these things. On the one hand, I do think that Donald Trump is just a master of gut-level marketing and propaganda from way back before he was in politics and so forth. And so if you are not actively sort of engaging with the larger landscape of empirical and factual information and so forth, right or left, you're going to be subject to just buying the lines that feel good to you and so forth. And so there's that. Now, the other explanation for that, that particularly many conservatives will be sensitive to, is the idea that the mainstream media is biased left to begin with. And so that the more you are
which
in touch
with
the New York
Times. Which is a huge talking point, and that is
this,
not the
this
truth.
Is, this, most
major media
let's just remember, Dominique,
are owned Dominique, by right-wing conservatives.
Dominique DePrima has a definition of the left-right spectrum, which is obviously
shifted a bit different from where other people are in terms of the way the world views things, as opposed to the Fox News definition.
We can talk about it, but there are thousands of talk radio stations
across this country.
Oh, absolutely.
Almost all of them are owned by conservatives, and a huge number of them. I mean, there's only a handful that are even liberal.
Oh yeah, KBLA is a huge exception
outlier,
in terms of being impactful.
I mean,
generally,
that's just a blatantly wrong talking point. The media is not controlled by liberals.
Okay,
that's BS.
Okay, lightning round question for you: agree or disagree? 90% plus of journalists in America are registered Democrats or people who vote left.
Disagree.
That's true. That's a statistical fact, Dominique.
That's not the truth. Okay,
I mean,
according to who?
Bring it to me,
because I've seen different studies, number one and number two. Most of them don't want to tell you.
Did you see the NPR
piece?
Did you see Yuri Berliner's piece on NPR
Yes,
recently?
I did. They have a whistleblower in NPR. And it's interesting because they've also had...
Let me just get this point out. Part of what they talked about was that NPR, which has a stated mission of including different points of view in their editorial culture, something like 68 or 73 out of 68, or I can't remember the exact number. It was like out of all 70 employees, not a single registered Republican in the newsroom at NPR. Not a single
one. And that could be explained by a lot of things, including the fact that they were vilified by Republicans who tried to defund them, so maybe Republicans weren't rushing to work there. I don't know, but I do know this. I do know this. They, when it comes to DEI, they're pretty much W-H-I-T-E, and when I listen to it, I do not detect a liberal bias. I know that they had a disgruntled whistleblower, and they do have some problems with their credibility with the left and the right, certainly with communities of color. I can't stand that talking point because it's not
true. Maybe it's mostly like neoliberal.
Have you not watched the coverage of the Gaza situation?
Well, I mean, so it becomes a question of how are you defining
cravenly conservative
right and left? Because the majority, Okay, now we're really stepping
it's
into some
subtle
stuff. I was just gonna make the point. Hopefully, I make this in a tactful way. That just, you know, the majority of Jewish people in America have been Democrats, have been liberals, and so forth, right? But it doesn't.
Majority of Jewish people in America have been liberals.
Yeah, well, absolutely. According to the traditional mainstream way of I got to put on my Dominique lens here and kind of.
I don't even think that's true anymore.
Registered Democrats. That's definitely true. Registered Democrats. Most Jewish people are registered Democrats and so forth.
I haven't seen the data. I do believe it's possible. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Again, there's a spectrum within registered mm-hmm. Democrats, all the way from Joe Manchin to,
yeah,
you know, AOC.
Yeah, of course,
so
of course,
anyway,
of course, yeah.
You were mm-hmm. in the middle of answering Paul's point, and we got into an argument about
yeah.
the dumb
well,
talking
the only
point,
other thing I wanted to say on what Paul...
The media is crazily conservative.
It's not a dumb talking point. I agree with you that there's a nuance. I'm not saying that the media is like populist progressive or anything. I'm not saying that.
Or even
I'm not
mildly
saying,
liberal.
I'm saying that I'm saying that mainstream left of center Democrat at the very least. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but Paul's,
not even.
Paul also. We got to come back to that. Paul also made the point that chaos is not good for your 401k. I agree with that. You know, it's so entertaining to see Trump and so on and so forth, and you know, just the landscape of turmoil in politics. We forget that this isn't a reality show; this is real life. But the potential for social chaos and the consequences that can ripple out from that go way beyond a dip in your stock holdings. You know,
yeah, that's true.
But Paul's point is certainly a fair one.
Okay, Paul had one more point to make.
Oh,
sorry, Paul. We like just took off. See, that's a good call. What's your final point, Paul?
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I just want to make sure that people understand that money, when I hear people say check, check, check. See, Donald Trump is a con artist. He's always been a con artist. He'll sell you magic beans like he did something when he really didn't. That money that we received during the pandemic, and a lot of people overlooked that part, he handled the pandemic so bad that over 1 million people died because of his decision, because he was a chief of commander. But those stimulus checks that everybody got came from the Democratic House in Congress. That's Nancy Pelosi. But what he did is he signed the checks and said, look what I did for you. Sometimes it takes people, and that's cues towards what I shared that's been proven from the NBC poll. That was registered voters. That was over 1,000 people. And the numbers were skewed towards where people are getting their information from. Thank you. That's all.
Yeah, tell it to Sexy Red. She's the one voting for Trump because of the stimmy. Do you have any response to what Paul's saying about the Trump con? Because it was an accurate point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I believe that... Trump, I mean, in fairness to Trump, I think he would have had to have signed off on that House legislation, right? And so, but it is true that Trump has been, again, Trump is always putting his name on stuff that hasn't ceased with him being president of the United States. He's been very good about that. I actually think a better example of President Trump sort of taking credit for something for which, and another president might have done this too, but there's a lot of talk about the prosperity of the early Trump years when he was in the White House. But truth be told, the economy was already very much had reached the place of a strong recovery by the final years of Obama, right? And so Trump inherited that recovery. He did juice it through tax cuts and so forth.
For the rich.
I mean, you know, but there was a stimulus to the economy that came in the form of tax cuts, but he also eradicated some of the recovery on the national debt that was occurring towards the latter years of Obama's economy as well. And that's not even to give Obama a whole bunch of credit. It's just to say that this is something that politicians do in general, take credit for things that they weren't really responsible for. Donald Trump is particularly adept at that.
Okay, we got John Wood Jr. here. He has his own show on Sundays, 9 a.m. Let's see, let's at least go to Kwamel calling us from Gardena, and we'll at least get you started, Kwamel. You're on with John Wood Jr. on KBLA Talk 1580.
I saw this coming. Jeez. Brother John.
Yo.
We ain't hung out in a while, man.
It's been a minute, brother. It's been,
you guys have history.
Man.
This is an old friend here. What's going on, brother? Good to hear you.
Yeah. Gotta answer a phone, answer a text, bro.
I'm bad about that.
I met my man's around when he was running against Maxine Waters. But so before we get to the points, which obviously going to come after the break, I was wondering, do you and Maxine ever speak, and have y'all kind of like raps, or was there too much enmity from the race?
Nah, I wouldn't say that there's any enmity between me and Maxine. We had a nice encounter.
Congresswoman Waters,
the Honorable Congresswoman Waters, and we had a positive interaction during the campaign. I've met her a few times, but I wouldn't say that I have any close rapport with her. But I would be very much interested in speaking to Congresswoman Waters this many years on the other side of the campaign.
Maybe you can get her to do your show. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Kwamel, we'll continue this conversation when we come forward. I didn't know you all were drinking buddies. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
More of First Things First with Dominique DePrima when we come forward. At KBLA Talk 1580, we do more than just talk.
You got a big mouth.
Hello, Joe, you're up. Welcome.
We're unapologetically progressive, and we don't black down.
We are unapologetically progressive, and yet we have an unapologetic Republican who comes on Sundays at 9 a.m. He is John Wood Jr., the Church of the Braver Angels, Sunday mornings on KBLA. Braverangels.org, right?
Braverangels.org.
Why are we friends that anyway? I think we both love black people.
We do.
I think we're both committed to justice as we see it.
We are. We are.
We're both, you know, readers, thinkers.
I think we definitely both enjoy the back and forth of the conversation over politics and ideas.
Yeah, we agree on very little, but we have fun disagreeing about
it. Exactly. I think we're good at going deep and not getting our feelings hurt.
That's true. You know? That is true.
Whatever it is. and we also have a lot of multicultural experience and so forth that I think we can compare notes on, because there's all sorts of tensions and you know, implications that come with that.
And political experience. And I do think one thing we have in common is neither one of us is afraid to buck our party.
Well, right. Exactly. Actually, I think neither one of us is comfortable unless we're not bucking our party a little bit. We might be looking at sort of a reverse mirror sort of situation, actually, now that I think about it.
Let's go back to your buddy Kwamel from Gardena. I know you had a question, comment, conversation, because you always do, Kwamel.
All right. Well, that was good day to call. I'm glad it's an actual talking point Tuesday this week.
Yeah.
So let me get a frame going here. And I want to ask this to you, John. So
yes.
one thing I always say is there's nothing wrong with being a black conservative, and then I kind of get into my other things. Now with you in particular, before I get into my big point, I kind of vibe that maybe you're not full on pursuing a conservative worldview. Maybe it's more a different place for the Oxford worldviews, more moderate, more centrist. Could I be wrong?
You're wrong.
Or is it just more open-minded?
You're wrong. You're wrong.
Or is it just more open-minded?
It's more civil.
Dominique, we gotta be fair to the brother. Let's let him.
I'm going to let him respond, but I've argued with this guy about enough political points. No, he's definitely hardcore conservative. Go ahead, John.
Well, okay, that's interesting. I feel like I'm somewhere a little bit between what both of y'all are saying here. Look, I say that I'm philosophically conservative, and what that means for me is that there are traditional values and institutions in American life that mean a great deal to me on a cultural level that I think have a strong foundational benefit to all of America. And so I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about, to a certain degree, a free market economy with appropriate regulations, buttressing that. I do believe in a culture of, I don't want to say self-sufficiency that doesn't acknowledge the fact that none of us are self-made men. I don't quite go that far. I believe in community, but I do believe in cultural communities that have their own identities, even if they have multicultural interaction with people outside of that. And so I don't want to see the black community sort of dissolve and disappear culturally and demographically, even as I also value multicultural integrationism and so forth, right? Both of these things should be able to exist in tandem with each other. And, you know, I'm a great admirer. I tell people my two principal role models in the black freedom tradition are Martin Luther King Jr., for his moral and philosophical and spiritual worldview and courage, his prophetic witness. But then Booker T. Washington, as a black institution builder, building out self-sufficiency, institutional power, right, and political clout from the ground up. And so if you take those two and smush them together, you get a sense.
But all of that sounds really great on paper. But when you drill down to policy, Cuomo, he supports many very straight up and down conservative policies. We'll talk.
And at the same time, I have not voted for a Republican for president since 2012. I only voted for one ever once, and that was Romney in 2012. I've literally been voting independent on the national level since then. So I do sort of functionally operate as an independent, if you will.
Right.
But to Dominique's point, you know, I do come down in a more conservative direction on most policy things, but not all.
No, okay. So I mean, I can understand pursuing a conservative worldview. Now that, and that's part of why I was like, okay, that's that. You know, we could rap, and we've been rapping ever since. Because I'm like, okay, the brother's a conservative, but not a reactionary. To my point, I'm gonna be real brief on it and get off this phone. is the whole thing about a lot of black Republicans, especially a lot of these black Trump supporters, is that they're not riding. They're not riding for the team, for us. They tend to kind of give themselves over to the white supremacists. They give themselves over to the charlatans. Mm. They walk away, look the other way when these folks just run around serving rich people and things like that.
Yeah.
Which I think there needs to be more pushback on. I understand, Dominique, so I'm gone.
No, but I was just waiting for you to get to the question.
I think I got the question though. Like, you know, where are black Trump supporters like really coming from? I think that's what Kamel's getting at, vis-a-vis their relationship with the rest of the community and so forth. And again, I think it's something that very much varies. I think that you do have some black Trump supporters who, frankly, are kind of down on black people in general. Not to call folks out, but in this instance, I will say that, you know, brother like, you know, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, to me, falls into that camp a little bit. I can't remember two good things.
It's National Mental Health Awareness Month tomorrow. That's what camp he falls into for me. He needs help.
Nothing but love and goodwill for all my brothers and sisters out there. I've never heard Jesse Lee Peterson say two good things about black people. But then, you know, you take, and I don't agree with this brother either, by the way, but you take someone like Daryl Scott, who Trump referred to as his pastor. I think that Daryl Scott does love black people. I think that Daryl Scott just probably just confused about.
Daryl Scott waiting for a check. Let's not discount the opportunist part of it.
Me and Daryl Scott were very much on the same page when Charlie Kirk came after Martin Luther King Jr. There are points at which you hear people on the right saying things that feel overtly racist sometimes or implicitly racist. And I do see Daryl Scott calling those things out whenever he sees them. And so, you know, and again, I think that me and Daryl Scott probably disagree on as much as we might agree on. But that's just to give you a sense of the range of black Trump supporters that exist in the world.
Well, I got more questions, but we don't have time. I want to hand you the mic because, you know, you're doing a lot of work with Braver Angels. And what do you want to leave us with this morning?
Well, you know, I mean, for me, Braver Angels' work really is about pursuing and actualizing the beloved community in America. If part of how we define that is a democratic society that is genuinely integrated across lines of identity, be it political and racial, with an emphasis on doing dignity to people, you know, seeing the imbued human worth in all human beings and recognizing the fact that democracy doesn't really function all that well unless that is what we are pursuing. And so, you know, I would love for people to check out Braver Angels. It is a membership organization that is dedicated to building bridges of communication and dialogue between folks on the left and the right across all sorts of issues, racial, geographical, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I also write a column for USA Today. People want to check that out, and you can follow me at John Wood Jr. on X, erstwhile Twitter, and wherever you get your social media.
Well, it's great to see you, John Wood Jr., and I encourage everyone to check out his show Sunday mornings at 9 on KBLA as well. And until we meet again.
Until we meet again. Thank you, Dominique.
Until we meet again. All right. News, traffic, and sports. Good. And then we're opening up these phone lines on KBLA Talk 1580.